friends, Joni and Mike, plan to delve into the unknown paranormal world in hopes of uncovering the unknown and the unheard. Welcome to EVP Spirit Talk on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to EVP, Egypt Valley Spirit Talk Radio. I'm Joni, and I am flying solo tonight because my co-host slash brother slash team member had to work a double at the hospital. And, Mike, if you guys are listening down there tonight, I'm going to do my best. But I do have a I have Reverend Tim Shaw tonight, so we should have a good time. He's very informative and a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to that. So, I don't know. In order to kill a little time, I usually do historic histories, but tonight I thought maybe I'd touch on Edgar Cayce, because a lot of people don't actually seem to know who he is other than his name. So I wrote up a little paper on him, and I'd like to read that to you. Edgar Cayce, he was also known as the Sleeping Prophet, by the way. He was born in Kentucky to a farming family in March of 1877. He was a humble, sensitive man that loved his family, fishing, gardening, was a skilled photographer, and taught Sunday school. He often wondered why God would pick someone like him to give a special power, at which point his ever-supportive wife, Gertrude, would remind him, Jesus was a carpenter. The apostles were ignorant, obscure fishermen and tillers of the soil. Cayce had quit school back in the sixth grade to help support his family. So what was Edgar Casey's gift? This simple man for 43 years conducted long-distance healings while in a trance. Over 60 years ago, he spoke about karma, meditation, Akashic records, auras, soulmates, and spiritual growth before these phrases ever came into fashion. For over 40 years, he would daily lie on his couch and enter into a self-induced sleep state. After being given the name and location of a subject, he would give them a reading. One copy was mailed to the subject and the other filed. Copies of over 40,000 readings are on file in Virginia Beach at the ARE. The ARE, or Association for Research and Enlightenment, was founded in 1931 by Cayce. He had been instructed to move to Virginia Beach in 1925 during one of his trances. This is a period that his readings began to take on more esoteric themes. He established the Cayce Hospital also in 1929 there. Because he felt he couldn't refuse help to others, this is when his own physical health began to deteriorate and he began to experience fatigue and emotional drain. Edgar Cayce passed on January 3, 1945 from a stroke. He died penniless, but the Cayces always had just enough to survive. Edgar never worried about it, though, because he had faith, and they would always be provided for, and they always were. He has left behind a legacy of enlightenment. The ARE has an international headquarters in Virginia Beach, a regional headquarters in Houston, Texas, and representatives throughout the U.S., as well as Edgar Cayce centers in 37 countries, members in 70 countries, a global network of fellowship around the world. In 1901, he gave his first health reading of thousands. He could diagnose and treat through his trance. He came up with prescriptions that druggists then didn't even know they could properly compound. His famous medical cures became the basis for homeopathy and still are used by millions today. As his readings began to turn more esoteric into prophecy, the phase began. He foresaw both world wars, California and New York earthquakes, the deaths of two presidents in office, which coincided in the time frame of Franklin Roosevelt and John Kennedy. These are just a couple of the hundreds of subjects he read on. Some were spot on. Other times, meaning was read into them that Cayce didn't intend due to his dry sense of humor. Most of his transcripts are filed at the ARE in Virginia Beach. The facility offers a newsletter and quarterly magazine that covers topics like ancient mysteries, personal spirituality, holistic health. They also offer conferences, massage school curriculum, retreat-style camp for children and adults, a volunteer network continuing education classes with a master's program in transformative theories and practices, as well as an on-site health center in Spall, all from a humble, uneducated photographer, Edgar Casey. Now, when I was writing this up, I looked at a lot of stuff, and I have several books, which if anybody wants to read about Edgar Casey, my favorite is the Sleeping Prophet. It's by Jeff Stern. I think it was published in the late 60s, and it's the best biography, and it has a lot of his casework in it. If you really want to get the full depth of what he could do and what he was like. They did address 2012 being the big thing that it is right now. They did address that in one of the videos I watched, the people that are at the ARE now. He didn't refer to it. He referred to that age as the Aquarian age, which, you know, of course, is the age of purity. And he did talk about it in this time frame also of 2012. And he mentioned that what would be coming out of that is, as he said, purity and global consciousness, where we are all going to be aware of our responsibilities to others, even across the whole world. Spiritual consciousness that we haven't even tried to experience so far. Each and everyone, every soul will be aware of their ability to communicate with the divine. Because I think, the way I understood it, the divine already communicates with us, but we don't recognize it, or we don't understand it, or we deny it, or whatever. But that's all going to change, according to Casey, and it's going to be gradual, that you're not going to wake up on, I think it's December 22nd, and everything's going to be different. It's going to be a gradual change, and all for the good. And to prepare for the new age, people should be preparing now. Change their energy. Apply the very best we know to ourselves and each other to take care of each other and ourselves. Love our Creator, love one another, and try to get harmony in sync with all areas and others in our lives. So we'll see. Like I said, there's several books out about Casey, and Jeff Stearns is the one that I would recommend for anybody that wants to start exploring him and reading him. I've read him for about 20 years, and I just think he was amazing. The Virginia Beach, the ARE in Virginia Beach, if anybody's down that way, it's very easy to find. I believe it's right on Pacific Avenue. It's a long structure. You can't miss it. It's beautiful. And we have been there a couple times, and you could spend a day wandering around and look at the libraries and the pamphlets and get a massage or whatever you want to do. I would recommend it to anybody that wants a nice, quiet, reflective day. And maybe a chance to expand ourselves and learn something. So that is my report on Edgar Casey. And, oh, I'm sorry. Also, I have my producer, Mike, there somewhere. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Sorry about that. I was trying to warn you.
Yep.
So that's that. And what I also wanted to mention, since Mike basically has redone the ASPR website, and it's awesome. We now have a events page, and I did want to mention some of the events that are coming up here in the next few months. The first one is on April 25th, not too far from now. It's 1 to 3 p.m., and it's the NKYPS meet and greet, which is Crystals Group Northern Kentucky Paranormal Society. They will be at the Boone County, Kentucky Public Library, and they will be showing some of their evidence and discussing paranormal, taking questions, talking. And anybody that's interested in attending that, please contact Crystal Brooks at nkyps@ymail.com. Another one that we have coming up would be MAPS Paranormal Conference, MAAPS. It's May 22nd, May 23rd of this year. It's at Kalamazoo, Michigan, their historic state theater. It will be hosted by them, and they have vendors and speakers. Some of them are A&E's Paranormal Cops, Ghost Vodka, which I believe is a band, I think, Jason Sullivan, Readings by Tiffany Glass, another group, Ghost Tour, SMPTV, and a lot of other things. Any questions with that, you need to contact Denise at denise@smparanormal.com. And in October, we have the Miami Town Paranormal Fest, which would be my producer Mike and his gang. That is October 2nd, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m., State Route 128 Miami Town at the Town Hall. It will be hosted by Miami Town Ghost Talk host. It includes paranormal vendors, investigators, authors, psychics, and more. Crafters, photographers, there's even kids' activities at this one, guys. For more questions on that, you need to contact Mike, info@miamitownghosttours.com. So that's what we have coming up so far, and I'm sure we'll be posting more stuff on the website events.
I've got more coming to me from other hosts, so keep checking me.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, I do want to compliment you. You did an awesome job on this website.
Thank you.
Much more functional. I love it.
Thank you.
So, okay, well, that was all right. I think I killed a few minutes. I think we're going to take a break and, I don't know, maybe play a song, do a couple commercials, and then we have the Reverend Tim Shaw, one of my favorite guests ever, and we'll be talking to him about just whatever he wants to talk about and all kinds of stuff when we come back.
Sounds good.
Yep, hang around.
But I can be somehow. Have you heard the stories of Bobby Mackey's music world being haunted? Maybe you heard the stories from others. Maybe you've seen it on the Travel Channel, or maybe you've seen it on World's Scariest Places. Either way, here is your chance to find out if the stories are true. Come down to Bobby Mackey's every Friday and Saturday and join us and KYPS and our partner group Craps as we host the Haunted Ghost Tours at Bobby Mackey's. Tours are only $5 per person and last approximately a half an hour. We know it's haunted. We have the evidence to prove it. Maybe you'll have an experience of your own or collect evidence of your own. Hope to see you there.
Paratrinity Radio airs live every Saturday on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Join hosts Mike and Ellie Saturday, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at ASPRN.com. Sponsored by HostYourGhost.com. Paratrinity Radio, where nothing is sacred.
History states that the paranormal activity has been around for many years. Recently, since the new millennium, it seems it has been on the rise. We at Tri-State Paranormal are here to help people with their fears and their concerns. We don't charge for our services. If you feel like you have some strange activity going on in your home, please give us a call or go to our website at www.tspnorthernkentucky.com. We're here to help you.
And hi, we are back, and we have Reverend Tim Shaw live online here. For those of you who don't know who he is, which probably aren't many with us here tonight, he's an ordained spiritualist minister, certified medium, Reiki healer, master teacher level, I believe. Aren't you, Tim?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. Trained spiritualist healer, dowser, paranormal investigator, and metaphysical instructor, so he pretty much has it all wrapped up, I think.
It's called running the gambit and not having anything to do on Friday nights. That's exactly what it is.
Oh, man, you probably look forward to Friday nights, then. So, yeah, I saw, where were you at? Last week was Gettysburg?
Oh, my God, yeah. We were, not last week, it was the week before. We were down there for Phenomenology. That's the way it is, 102. I can never say the name. Fantastic conference out in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania at the Eisenhower Conference Center. And it was almost like the who's who of anybody that was in the paranormal were there. It was a riot. We got there on a Thursday, and thank God we left on Sunday morning because I don't think I could have taken too much more of it.
Yeah, I saw some of the pictures. That's funny. yeah, you know what? Paranormal people can have fun too, okay?
Well, you know, I mean, the problem with a lot of paranormal people and a lot of the metaphysicians is that they sometimes take themselves a bit too seriously. And I'm not advocating going out there and acting like a jerk or an idiot. But on the other hand, I mean, you have to be able to go and enjoy what you're doing because the highest form of vibration is joy and laughter. So in order to go and be effective, you've got to bring those two elements into anything that you're doing.
I totally agree. But I don't know, because it's like if you go to a doctor's convention, they're all having fun. So why can't everybody else do the same thing?
Well, the other thing is, I mean, I've known Chip Coffee for a couple of years, and Chip's a riot.
Oh, are you there?
Oh, my God, yeah.
I bet he is.
Well, I have an official scarf. I have an official Chip Coffee scarf that he gave me on Thursday night. And he was in such demand. And he promised me an interview, and he said, I promise, Tim, I'll get you, even if it's a couple minutes. So all of a sudden, here comes Chip Coffee down there in his pajamas, literally. And he came down, he gave me about 10, 15 minutes, and then he was off. He had to go. I mean, that's how much of a demand he's at. And, but what a great guy. He's a riot. And, Johnny Zaffis and Stacey Jones gave me interviews, which was fantastic. But one of the greatest interviews I had, and I got a chance to meet this guy for the first time, was Britt Griffiths from Taps West Coast. He's on the new Ghost.
Okay. Yeah.
What a fantastic guy. Just a down-to-earth person, really hysterical. We literally laughed through the entire interview, which was about 45 minutes long. So he was great. So there were some unbelievable people there. And the Constantinos from Nevada.
Yeah.
Specialists, they were there. Chris Fleming. I mean, Chris and I hit it off. First, I've talked to him a couple times through email, but we hit it off right away because his father, a lot of people don't realize this, but his father was a pretty well-known hockey player back in his day. And I walked up to him. I said, "Hey, Chris," I said, "my name's Tim Shawn. You know what? I got to tell you," I said, "I have an original 1972 Buffalo Sabres yearbook with your dad's autograph in it." He looked at me, goes, "Oh my God!" I said, "You know what? I'm really thrilled about, not that I'm meeting Chris Fleming, the psychic, because he is good, but I'm meeting Reg Fleming's kid." And he was, I mean, he had tears in his eyes. So it was really nice. We had a ball. Wow. Oh my, what a ball!
That sounds like it. What was it all about up there?
Was it an informational thing? It was mostly informational. They had, the lectures they had were phenomenal. I didn't get a chance to really go to any because of the fact that I was so busy doing interviews and I was at my table. But, it covered everything. They talked about basic paranormal going all the way right through the gambit, to really advanced stuff. And I'll tell you what, it was $170 a ticket for all the people that were there that you got a chance to see, and the meet and greet on Thursday night, and everybody took the time to, if you wanted your pictures taken with them or you wanted autographs, they all took the time to do it. So I mean, it was well worth it. Plus they had breakfast in the morning. So I mean, how can you beat that?
Well, now, was it a real breakfast or was it a continental breakfast?
No, it was actually a real breakfast. I would have just driven into town. But actually, what's so nice about it, it's the location of the conference center is just outside of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. So it's on the Emmitsburg Pike. So if you go and head into town, I mean, you go literally right through Pickett's Charge. It's phenomenal. You go right through the second day's battlefield. It's really something. You know, my great grandfather fought right up there. His regimental monument's right down the road from the conference center. His brother was killed in the wheat field. So, I mean, I have a real, I have a big kinship there. And there's not really too much of that battlefield that I haven't walked. I used to work a lot with a friend of mine who was a researcher, and he's written a couple books about Gettysburg. So it was really a great time. I just wish I had more time to actually have gotten back into Gettysburg. But another thing that happened that wasn't at the conference, I got a chance to meet Lorraine Warren, who was down the road a ways at the Farnsworth, and Ryan Buell and some of the people from Paranormal State were there, and she brought in a lot of haunted artifacts from her various cases. So that was a lot of fun. So, I mean, it was just one of those weekends where it was literally a whirlwind where we didn't get a chance to really stop. And I was up there with the Iron Island Museum people, where I work out of. They're up in here in Buffalo, New York, and that's a haunted site. And it was just, you know what? When I came home, my stomach hurt from laughing. That's when you know you had a successful conference.
Isn't that the truth? Oh well, how old is Mrs. Warren now?
I wouldn't. You know what? I wouldn't dare to ask.
No, you never ask a woman that. Never, ever.
Exactly. But I mean, she's up there. I mean, I would venture she's in her 70s. Sweet lady.
I've seen her on Paranormal State a couple times, and of course, her and Ed had for so many years. That's all they did, and she just seems like she's still got her energy, and she just seems like the sweetest thing ever. Because it's, "Oh, honey," you know, and things like that. And,
well, I got a chance. I was going to. When I was on CBS, I had a show for a while on CBS Radio,
right.
And I was all set to interview her, and we left CBS just before I could do it, so I never got a chance to interview her. But I did talk to her quite a few times on the phone, and I got a chance to meet her. So I walk up, I say, "Hi, you know, my name's Tim," and blah blah blah, and I said, and she's got these roosters, these Polish roosters, and they're really a beautiful, beautiful rooster. And I'm going, How are those Polish roosters? Oh my gosh. She goes, "Oh, sweetie." Oh, and she's shaking my hands and everything. She was there for 5 minutes. Her son-in-law, Tony, comes up. He's like, "We got to get moving." But really, she was a great lady. Really great lady.
Yeah, that sounds really awesome. Sounds like a lot of fun. The Iron Island, is that what you said?
Iron Island Museum.
Okay, now it's Buffalo. And correct me if I'm confused, because I probably am anyway. Is that, was it a railroad? Close to a railroad station or a railroad station or something like that at one time?
Well, Iron Island, you're thinking it's right actually from the street, Lovejoy. You can see the Buffalo Central Terminal right from that. And that's another,
that's
Right.
Okay.
That's another location that was investigated by TAPS when they were here up in Buffalo. But Iron Island Museum, the name Iron Island comes from the fact that it was a community that was built to service the railroads, and it was surrounded on three sides by railroad, thus, Iron Island. And it used to be an Episcopal Methodist church at one time in the 1880s, and then it was bought by a funeral home, or became a funeral home in the 50s, and now it's a museum, the private museum, for the Iron Island Historical Association. So, I mean, it's a really beautiful little place, and it's pretty active, I have to say. I'm pretty jaded after all the years I've been doing this. I still love to go in there. I work out of there. I teach classes out of there. Matter of fact, as a shameless plug, there's 5 tickets left for Saturday or Sunday.
That's what I was going to ask you, if that's where you do your classes at.
Okay. Yeah, I love it there. But on Sunday, we're doing something called Sinful Sweets and Scented Spirits, which is we're doing a student of mine, Glenn White, and I are doing gallery readings. We're doing open gallery readings. We have 50 people that will be there. I think there's 5 tickets left for it. And afterwards, we're going to have all sorts of sweets and chocolates and stuff. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And the reason why we call it Scented Spirits is because I'm doing something that's a very, very traditionalist way of doing gallery readings. Because a gallery in the spiritualist religion is actually part of our service. And what we're doing is something called flower readings. And what we do in flower readings is we actually focus on the flower. And we let the flower actually tell us where we're supposed to go and who we're supposed to do this message work for. And then at the end, we give them the flower. You know, so it's kind of a nice way of doing it.
Wow. Just a flower.
Pardon?
Like a flower plant, just a flower?
Like flowers, like you cut flowers, roses, carnations, that sort of thing, daffodils. I mean, we're going to go out there and I consecrate them for spiritual, as a tool of spiritual communication, and we use them for that. And that is almost a form of scrying. A lot of people think of scrying when, doing crystal scrying or crystal ball reading, water scrying, that sort of thing. But you can use any object to scry. All it really is a point of focus. And that point of focus is actually what they call laser point focus. And that is primarily what you kind of step aside from reality and you let that focus take over. As a medium, the way I was taught, I was never taught to use any kind of tools whatsoever. And I was taught 100% mental mediumship. It was drilled into you from the time you were young. So for me to use focus, it's a lot easier because I'm so used to having to go and, stand up in front of like 125 people to do gallery readings and you're letting it just guide you. Where do you want to go, this way, actually, what I do is by having something in my hand, like a flower, I'm able to go and just give it that pinpoint and just let it, and then just let it go where it wants to go. So it's almost like, again, it's stepping aside from reality. It's just actually, when I teach, it's called the suspension of reality.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, because your parents, was it your parents were psychics and mediums? You come from a long line in your family of people that have done this.
Right. My relatives, the spiritualist religion has been in the family since the 1880s, and that was right around the golden age of spiritualism. And, of course, I mean, the Fox sisters initiated the beginnings of the religion in the 1840s. But around 1880, it became something that akin to Victorian parlor games. And actually, at one time in the United States, the spiritualist religion was the fastest growing religion. So it's got a long tradition. Unfortunately, in the 1900s, as many of us know, and as a lot of the organized spiritualist religions right now are probably listening and saying, "Oh my God, he's not going to say this again." But I mean, there was a lot of frauds, and there was a lot of charlatans, and a lot of problems in the 1900s, and you had a lot of fakes. And unfortunately, it really gave the whole religion a black eye. It didn't really have a resurgence until probably about the 1970s, although it was active in the 40s and 50s, but really in the 1970s it really kicked back in with the New Age coming in. But spiritualist religion actually is one of those religions that almost fade out, but then comes really comes back at times when there's war or a lot of insecurity, because people are seeking answers. So what they're doing is they're out there looking, and they're looking for any alternative. And unfortunately, sometimes they look for the wrong reason, but a lot of times they look for the right reasons, and that's why we're there.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Falk sisters, I'm sure, well, you want to tell some people about that? I'm not sure everybody knows who the Falk sisters were, actually.
Oh, the Falk sisters were, actually, what it was in a little rented cottage in Hydesville, New York, about 35 miles east of Rochester, probably about an hour and a half drive from Buffalo, New York. What happened was the Fox family had decided to go and make a new start. John Fox, their father, was a raging alcoholic, and there was a whole they had all these children, and the children were pretty much grown. And actually, Mr. and Mrs. Fox had actually separated for some time. And what happened was, is he gave up drinking and he became a devout Methodist, and they came back together, and the union produced Katie and Maggie Fox. So they were looking for a new start, and the Erie Canal was really a big thing back then. So they settled near Newark, New York, in a little town called Hydesville. Now, what people don't realize is it didn't the paranormal activity didn't just start with the Fox sisters. What the story goes, and I say this is a story, because by now there's so much mythology around it, and all we can do is take some of the writers and some of the newspaper accounts that we do read and make our assessments from there. But the Bell family lived in this cottage, and what happened was is they feel that this traveling peddler was killed in the house by Mr. Bell for his goods and for the sum of $500. And what they do feel is that there was a false wall built down there in this like root cellar, and his head was cut off and buried into the soft floor. You know, it was an earthen floor, and the rest of the body was put in behind this wall. A servant girl went down there one day that was working for the Bell family and actually sank up to her, probably, they say her knee sometimes, it's probably just up to her ankle in some areas down there. And they said that Mr. Bell said, oh, that those are rats down there burrowing. So, he brought paving stones that he said he was storing for a new stone fence out there and paved the basement. Well, she got very sick and they ended up moving away from there. The Weeks family moved in, and all of a sudden there were bangings on the wall. A servant girl by the name of Jane, I believe, saw an apparition of a sandy-haired gentleman wearing a tan trousers and a black jacket. Their covers were pulled off them at night, whispers, and that sort of thing happened. They were forbidden to say anything while they lived there. After they moved out and after the Fox family and mediumship started to grow, they decided to jump on the bandwagon. They started mentioning it. But what happened with the Fox family was they moved there because a grown son, David Fox, lived right around, you know, within, right down the road. I can't remember how long, probably less than a half a mile away. Mm-hmm. So they said, we're going to start a new life here. Well, over time, what was happening is the girls were starting to experience this stuff. And Mrs. Fox had claimed that she had come from a long line of, well, what we call psychics.
Right.
One night, the bangings got so loud that I can't remember if it was Katie or Maggie. It's been a while since I reread the story, but they asked Mr. Splitfoot, do as I do. And Mr. Splitfoot was a slang name for the devil, and that was just a generic name they used. And she snapped her fingers three times. Well, the knocks repeated three times. She started asking yes or no questions, two knocks for yes, one knock for no. It started to answer in that manner. So that was really the first time in modern history that there was what they would consider spirit communication. Now, there was prophecy. The gifts of prophecy were all over the place. You had all sorts. You had the Millerites, and you had all sorts of other religions like the Quakers and the Shakers. And Mother Ann Lee of the Shaker movement, she had the gift of prophecy, and she said that there would be a time when the United States would grow both spiritually and financially. And that year, not only did the Fox sisters kind of create a sensation, but also gold or silver. I think it was gold or silver was found at Sutter's Mill. I think it was gold at Sutter's Mill. So I think that was a 1849. So it was the fulfillment of that prophecy. So, I mean, prophecy has not been anything that has been unusual. But the actual interaction of the common man with spirit, that's when it really started. Before then, it was always soothsayers, and of course it was medicine men or shamans or people like that.
Mm-hmm.
As time went on, I mean, the Fox sisters, they went on tour, mm-hmm. which was, you know, you have to understand that during this time, it was unusual for women to even address the public. So they were actually the first ones in the United States to actually stand before any kind of an audience in a public forum. So that was huge. And a lot of the women's right movement actually came from the spiritualist movement, because in the spiritualist communities, the spiritualist churches and assemblies, women had equal rights, because mediums, you know, would lead their services, or, you know, they would do the seances, and they would also address people, they would address the public in what they call inspired speaking, which is talking on subjects that you really have no idea about and letting spirit just flow through you. I kind of call it diarrhea of the mouth once it starts. You know? really it does, because once it starts, it starts floating out, or, you know, flowing out. And the next thing you know, you're like, what is this, you know? And they various forms of spirit communication started. I mean, we have all sorts of things that have been passed down to us from that age. I mean, even the Ouija boards, I mean, have.
Yeah, exactly. Beginning.
You know, I mean, of course, they were, you know, they're a little side. I don't know what you would say about the poor Ouija board. I mean, it's pretty malign now, you know. But, we use planches. All they were like larger versions of the Ouija board planche, except they had a pencil in it. And you had two people on there and a piece of paper underneath there. That's what they considered automatic writing back then. So, yeah, I mean, this stuff has been around for a long time.
Yeah, I had a Ouija board when I was like 7 or 8 years old. I remember when I was in school, all the girls came for Christmas one year. And we're fine.
First of all, every time I hear a story, a horror story, it's always a friend of mine. Or my relative, or whoever. It's almost never me. You know, once in a while, somebody come up. Well, then I always ask, well, what's the circumstances? What did you do? Why were you doing it? And they're like, oh, well, we were drinking a 30-pack, or, you know. I mean, it's always involved with booze or drugs or something like that. Well, what do you want? What like attracts like, you know? This is what you're asking for. This is what's coming in, you know? One of my mentors, Laura Mayville, there's a spiritualist camp in central New York who taught us what they call table turning or table tipping. She had a situation at Ithaca College where she was called in a dorm, and she had to clear the dorm. And what she said to me was this: I taught these kids how to use the Ouija board. And I said, why would you do that? She goes, because they're going to do it anyway, so let them do it right. And they never had a problem with it after that. And knowledge is what it's all about. I mean, people have got to realize this. I mean, as a dowser, I understand that, you know, you need this knowledge and belief in order to do this. As someone who's a paranormal investigator who clears houses, you have to have that. You have to have that knowledge that you're protected. You have to have that knowledge that you can do this. You have to have that knowledge that there's something else out there. You have to have that knowledge that, you know, when I'm doing a reading for somebody or doing gallery work, whatever's coming through, you have to have that knowledge to know why and when you're doing trance. That, you know, when you kind of walk away and your spirits, or, you know, you allow another entity or spirit to use your body for that trance work, that you'll come back. It's knowledge, and knowledge actually is better than belief, because belief iffy on. Knowledge, you know for a fact.
We had Bishop Long on a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about, Ouija boards in particular. And though he did, you know, say even, you know, the crystals and the dowsing rods or whatever, but his thing on it was that Ouija boards, well, no, all of them actually will lie to you that if it's a malevolent spirit or whatever, that they'll lie to you.
Exactly.
You know, I do believe that. So, and he's seen, it's his opinion, that you can't protect yourself, and, you know, I don't know if I buy that, But how I do think that people that do that kind of thing need to be trained.
I agree.
You know?
And this is the problem with it. If you have fear, something mm-hmm. negative can and will attach
it. Yeah, he said that too, yeah.
Yep. It will. I mean, I had a great conversation with Adam Bly. He works with the Roman Catholic Church as a layperson, and he's mm-hmm. big into demonology, and he works. As a matter of fact, he's one of the instrumental cogs in getting demonology and exorcism back in the training of a lot of Roman Catholic priests now. He's, you know, I mean, it's a big thing. It's a big thing.
I didn't know they didn't do that anymore.
Well, they do it, but I mean, they're starting to retrain. They're starting to put more. The bottom line is, you bring a priest in to go and bless your house, you got something negative in there. Well, you know what? You're going to amp up that stuff, and that's the way it works.
Really?
You have to be careful. You have to have a priest who is trained in this, who understands what's going on, and adapts themselves to the situation in order to do the correct prayers, or in order to do the when they bless the water, they have to be able to do it in a certain way with a certain focus, a certain belief system. And a lot of people don't realize that. I've been on cases where, you know, a woman will say to me, geez, Tim, I've had a Roman Catholic priest, two ministers, and a gaggle of New Age people in here, and we still got something negative. You know?
That's so, I mean, funny. Sorry.
But no, I mean, it's the way it is. You have to have somebody who knows what's doing. When it comes to demonic, I mean, the spiritualist religion doesn't teach demons. We don't teach demons, but our negative entities are just as demonic, you know, as anything else.
Well, that's
there.
The first thing. Are there demons? I mean, no, he seems to think that there is, and, you know, I understand that he knows what he's doing, and, you know, I respect his beliefs. Do I think they're demons? I don't know, because I'm open to everything. I'm not saying there's not, but I just don't know.
Well, you know, there's a lot of negative entities out there, and, you know, there are entities that were never born. So in my religion, are there demons and angels? No. But there are entities out there by different names that have almost the same attributes. So you have to go and you just weigh it as it is.
Okay.
If I run into something really tough, I know an exorcist with the Western Rite Roman Catholic Church. He's a bishop. So I bounce ideas off of him, and he tells me what I should be doing or whether I should walk away from the case and pass it on to somebody else who is more trained in it. So, I mean, it's again, knowledge is power in this. People can do so much harm and damage to a client's psyche. Not only their – let's put it right on the table. They got something going on in their house. What happens if it is bad? You got two options here. Sell the house or try to rid it. You've got to have the right people to go in there. And too many times some investigators will go into some houses unequipped, and they won't pass the case to someone who is knowledgeable, either because, A, they don't know any better, or perhaps, B, it's because of their ego that they want to hold on to the case. But, I mean, you have to be able to go and you have to step back. I've been on cases where I've stepped back because of the fact that I didn't know.
Right, and there are a lot of investigators. Now, you know what, you really have to be doing it for a while to get an idea of what you're doing and know when to do that. And then you have the newer people out there, and I'm not being derogatory, I'm just saying that they don't know enough. And that's, you know, the conversation comes up every now and then. Well, why should we have a formal training for these people? And that's stupid. And that you can't, I hear a lot of, you can't do that because it's an unproven pseudoscience. Well, you know what? You just said it. Because they don't know what they're doing. And this is nothing to play around with. And yes, I do think there should be training, real, relevant training places for these people.
Well,
for
everybody. I agree. John Zaffis, I've talked to him. I've known him for a few years now, and he's a great guy, but he says the same thing. Know what you're dealing with and try to find the appropriate way or person to help you. Mm-hmm. He will not think twice. I mean, first of all, you can't go and you can't bring a Jewish, a rabbi into a Christian home to rid it of anything demonic. You can't go and bring a Christian into a Native American home.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I mean, you've got to know what you're dealing with. You've got to know what it's all about. So the only way to do that is to have enough knowledge and just keep studying it so you can find the benchmarks of what's going on. and then take into consideration the religious beliefs of the people of whom may be suffering from it. But the one thing that Adam Bly and I were speaking or were talking about was that we actually realized that there is definitely a pattern to possessions, quote unquote possessions. You know, I mean, a lot of times it's infestation and, you know, oppression going into possession. But he actually even starts earlier than that. It sometimes it becomes, you can start the whole process by an obsession. There are people out there who are obsessed with the paranormal. They watch every paranormal show on there. They go.
I have a neighbor like that.
Oh, it's brutal.
And she calls me all the time. This is moving. You know, and I'm not saying it's not. We have investigator house. Yes, she has some activity. We've been there 3 or 4 times. But I wonder why the activity happens. Like
the activities, there because she calls it in. People don't realize, again, like attracts like. In spiritualist terms, spirits are attracted to your light. That's the way that's sort of the way we teach it. Your light, what you are, your personality. Spirits out there are looking for that. So if you're out there going and trying to, you know, you're going to play with your recorder every single day.
And she does.
That is part of the obsession. And don't be surprised if the next step will be it starts to grow. And that's why you have to be very, very careful, and you have to reinforce yourself through whatever ritual protection that you may believe in. I mean, I don't believe in rituals, so... I mean, I'm not too worried.
Your protection mode is just knowing who you are and practicing your, well, in your case, your life. I mean, how you live your life. Isn't that your protection?
Exactly. Exactly. I'm not a big person that, you know, I always joke about cutting the head off
a
chicken.
Carry a ton of crystals with you.
You know what I mean? Listen, I'm a crystal guy. I mean, readings and stuff, I use quartz for amping up. But I mean, it's the positive belief that you know that you are in total control of the situation. That is spiritual.
And that's where teaching comes in. People need to be taught that.
Exactly. Exactly. And reinforcement is a big thing, too. I mean, you just can't go out there and do a prayer circle and then go into a sort of a questionable situation. You really have got – and that's something, again, Adam and I were talking about, was the lack of religion in a lot of the paranormal investigators. What happened, or they say that they are belong to whatever religion, but yet they're not practicing.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize that religion plays a huge, important role in what we do. The belief system, I'm not saying that because I'm an ordained minister, you know, I mean, that, just throw that out the window.
Standing in the fridge?
Let's just say that, what the whole bottom line of what's going on is that you have to have a solid foundation in order to do this work. This isn't a freak show. This isn't a sideshow. This is something that can be deadly, deadly serious. I mean, it's great when you walk around, you get an EVP on a recorder. It's great when you get something on your hack box or like with me. I mean, I play around with the paranormal puck and that. You know what? When you start getting swearing and you start getting threats, then you start kind of thinking to yourself, maybe I don't want to do this anymore. And the only reason why you can come back to this is and do it effectively and just shrug a lot of that stuff off is because you have that solid belief system.
Mm-hmm. And your confidence and like you say, your good intentions and knowing that you're going to be all right.
Exactly.
But, you know,
exactly.
There's so many times the people that, you know, even have investigated for a good while, they get a little doubtful. And that's what you've got to fight against, I think.
Well, the minute that you're in doubt, that's the day, that's when you have to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
The minute that you're in doubt, and the reason why is because that's the chink in the armor. I got an attachment once, and the reason was because it was, I call it the case that never was, and I tell a lot of people about this because it was on a Native American reservation, and the doubt was, you know what, I really shouldn't be doing this because I know enough about this culture here in Western New York to know that it's a false face matter, it's for their medicine society, it may be their own medicine men that are doing this, I should not be doing that, or maybe I shouldn't be doing it, and that was the chink in the armor. When that chink is opened, that's all it needs. And if I hadn't gone and dropped that case, and if I had just pushed on, whatever it was would have gone to the next weakest link in the chain, which would have been my wife or my family or a team member or anything. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it works. And again, that's a universal trait of something that may be evil or demonic.
Really? Okay.
So you got to watch that. I mean, just, you know, common sense. There's a lot of common sense in this. People, because of, I mean, TV has been great because, like I said to Bert Griffiths, TV legitimized, I can't say it, made it okay. my teeth aren't working today.
Legitimizes or something like that.
Close enough. Anyway, but TAPS and TV really made it okay to be part of this, and you're not a freak going out and doing this stuff anymore. But on the other side of the coin, what happened was simply it doesn't show enough. It doesn't show what, you know, something that could be negative that happens to you. Something
that it makes it look so easy to go out.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. Come on. Anybody that goes out there. I was at Waverly Hills last year. I spoke at a seminar, and we went there two nights. Friday nights, I was there from 10 p.m. to 7 o'clock in the morning. I walked out with one breath on an EVP. One. The next night.
Well, you know, places like. Go ahead.
But the next night, there was a storm that came in, and one of the team members, matter of fact, Kurt Smith, that's over here, PIR radio, he got an 8-inch scratch on his back. A woman got hit with a piece of concrete. People recorded stuff that was unbelievable. I mean, you can't believe the EVPs. I mean, when I went through everything, I probably had 6-8 solid EVPs from that place. So, I mean, you know, I mean, yeah, it was a thrill ride, but at what's the cost? You know? What's the cost?
People
have to go and have to think about that. For me, it's a validation of what I do. And when I go out to teach people, I say, listen, this is what I captured. Listen to this. What are they saying? Help me. Or labored breathing, whatever. What is it? Is this residual? Is it in direct, is it a direct reply to something I said? These are all teaching tools, and that's why I use it. But, you know, I mean, a lot of people get this stuff and really don't do anything with it. So you have to ask yourself, what do you want to do with this stuff once you get it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. Well, and you know what? I think we have another – Mike, do we have a show following us tonight? He took the mic off.
Yes, we do have another show.
Yeah, because he redid the website, and we've got new shows starting, and I keep forgetting that I'm being followed now. And there was other things I want to talk to you about, but maybe we'll hit that next time. I wanted to touch on Lilydale and actually 2012, but we will get into that. We've got a couple minutes left. Tim, do you want to talk about anything you're going to be doing? Anything you want to tell us? Just go ahead.
Outside of, like, you guys are fantastic. Is that something good to say? Well, anyway, this Sunday, I'll be at the Aaron Allen Museum. We're going to do the scented... we're doing the Sinful Sweets and Scented Spirits gallery reading. I believe on the 21st, I'm doing a dowsing class up there. And you guys can hear me at the Black Cat Lounge. And if you guys want to hear some past shows, you can just go to www.blackcatpodcast.com, or you can go to my website. It's www.blackcatlounge.ning.com, or you can just look me up on Facebook, which is Tim Shaw or the Black Cat Lounge. And just stop by and say hi.
About the microwave. Never mention microwave, okay?
Ah! I'll tell you what, that microwave is something else. You got to watch them. You got to watch them every time.
Yeah, I think they're aliens.
Yes, they are. And after talking to some of the UFO people that I've talked to and interviewed, I am very, very convinced that they have a mind of their own.
Oh, well. Well, thanks so much, Tim, for coming on, and we will definitely catch you later and hopefully continue some of this conversation when you're not so busy. So I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me on. This has been a lot of fun.
Loved it. Okay, well, we will talk to you soon then.
Take care now.
You too. Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Thank you very much, Reverend Tim Shaw. That was awesome, as usual. And we have a show coming up after us tonight. Mike, is it Paranormal? What is it? I forget.
It's Paranormal Encounters.
Yeah, Paranormal Encounters starts at 10. If you want to hang around for that, it should be a good one. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll have a podcast up tomorrow if you want to tell your friends. So everyone have a good night, and thanks for listening to Egypt Valley Paranormal Spirit Talk.
All right.
All right, night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to EVP Spirit Talk. Visit your hosts, Joni and Mike, at www.EgyptValleyParanormalInvestigations.com. And be sure to come back every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for EVP Spirit Talk on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.